Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. This show, well, as every show, but this one in particular, you need to know it is pre-taped because right now, if you're listening to this on Thursday, we are kicking off Pursuit 2014. Woo, woo, woo. The day has finally come. We didn't know that it would. We were a little fearful, but we currently have over 400 single young adults descending upon our campus to be part of this weekend's events. So very exciting. If you don't hear me next week, it is because I literally expired after this conference. So we're going to see how that plays out. So anyway, thanks to all of you who did register, who are here. I can't wait to meet you. Those of you who didn't, look for it next time. If in fact we get to do a pursuit next time, we will keep you posted. Not to be a downer, but we have to see how this one goes. Okay, people? I'm just saying. All right. So all that to say, later on in the show, our counselor, Diane Moon, is back here to talk to a girl who is upset that her boyfriend wants a break. And I don't think this is Rachel off of Friends, but you know what happened when Rachel and Ross needed to go on a break. That was bad, although they did end up getting together. However, this girl, I think, is actually a real person, so that makes a difference. So fortunately, Diane has some good counsel for her. And then for our culture segment, we have the fabulous Hafiz Bauku here. He is an author. He is the author of Sex, God, and the Single Life, An Honest Journey to Satisfying Intimacy, a young guy who's a super amount of fun. So you're going to hear his own story, what God has taught him about sexuality as a single, and how he has re-scripted God's view of sex for himself now that he has met Christ. It was only 4 years ago, so cool stuff there. But here we are with our round table with a fun group of peeps. We have Macy, Austin, and Jackson. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Very glad to have you. And we're going to talk about, you know, we had a couple weeks on school debt, and then we talked to some married peeps about, like, going into marriage with school debt. Now we're going to talk about, like, wrestling with the fact of your parents divorcing and remarrying, and the whole, like, I think there are, like, some weird role things that come into play here, like, as you as the child and how you now relate to your parent, and maybe they're the person that you're that they're remarrying, or if they did when you were a kid, now what you assume to be your stepmom or stepdad. So let's start. I mean, I'm grateful that you guys are here to kind of tell your stories, because I think a lot of folks who are listening right now might be in the same situation. So can you briefly just let's walk through, explain a little bit, at what era in your life did your folks divorce and or remarry, or has that not happened yet? What was that kind of initial, as you look back on that season, what was your initial impression of that, and how have you learned to kind of reconcile that into your own story?
My parents got divorced right at the end of high school, mm-hmm. and then my dad remarried my sophomore year of college, so I guess like a year and a half after they got divorced. Mm-hmm. My mom, she was dating her husband for a while before they got married. They didn't get married until a year or so after I was out of college, or I guess 2 years. So yeah, like 6 years after they got divorced, my mom got remarried.
Okay.
My parents divorced, I guess I was about the same age in high school, 16. And neither of my parents have remarried since, but my dad got engaged 2 weeks ago.
Whoa.
So I haven't
so
really
he's been single for a long time.
And now yeah, just they okay. yeah, they both have. My mom, I don't know if she'll ever remarry. She didn't have a good experience with marriage. So, but my dad wanted to, he's dated people on and off over the years, finally just got engaged. So yeah, okay. It's kind of new.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, my parents were divorced when I was three-ish, I think. And both of them actually were married, probably remarried within the year.
Whoa.
I don't know who was unfaithful first. I don't know who was involved with whom first. My stepdad was a guy that lived in the same town my mom had been involved with. My stepmom was a stripper my dad met when he was in Salt Lake City, so he was on an out-of-town job. They never had plans for remarriage, long story there, but they ended up, she got saved, like radically, like God got a hold of her, and so she felt like living together wasn't the best thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if marriage was in their immediate plans, but they felt like with the faith choice they'd made, it was something they needed to do. So I was four-ish, five when both parents had remarried. So step parents immediately, two different homes immediately, and that whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. So that was kind of your growing up experience. I mean, you probably don't remember.
Really. Yeah. I have one or two memories of my dad and mom together, and that's about it.
Okay. Okay. Now, in any of these scenarios, was there Jesus or no Jesus, nominal faith, believers? I think, Austin, you had shared in your story, you grew up in the church and all that. How did that have an effect on things?
Yeah. Both of my parents are Christians and have been. I don't know how that influenced anything. It didn't seem to influence their marriage too much. I guess in remarrying, it's kind of, I know when my dad started dating again, the church that he was going to didn't really believe in, because he had committed adultery, he couldn't remarry. I don't really understand the rules, but he had to leave the church basically before he got engaged this time. So I know now he's kind of going through that process of finding a new church and everything with his fiance.
I grew up in a Christian home too, going to church, parents both professing. My mom, I feel like she was always kind of the model of what a Christian walk was like for me growing up. My dad kind of had the second life, so his whole faith, how personal it is somewhat still a question to me of, just what it means to him, just because he did totally have this other life with other women and all that. So I don't think his wife is a Christian, kind of has that nominal faith of, we're Christians. But my mom and her husband are both professing and practice it.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, my parents were, my dad and mom was Catholic, dad was Baptist. My mom all the way up through high school, Catholic schools. My dad, probably around seventh grade is when he kind of left the faith, you know, as a pretty young kid. And so when they got married, they just didn't go to church. And their foundation of their marriage was, I guess if there wasn't the term in the 70s of hooking up, but they were basically in a hooking up relationship that fell into marriage. And I've talked to my dad recently. He's like, I never had any intention of marrying your mom. I'm like, well, then why'd you do it? Like, that's not a real good vision for a long-term relationship. And so they just didn't go to church. And so
it sounded like he didn't have a vision for marrying your stepmom either, but she kind of drove him.
How my dad is alive, let alone that he, you know. And so, so faith came into my life after the my stepmom's faith experience and true got a hold of, because she had no church for her, no exposure to that, didn't know anything. And so that's where faith entered. But my mom and stepdad, there never has been. She was nominal Catholic, so I grew up in the Catholic church, but there wasn't an active faith in that home, the other home I was living in.
Okay. So how about, and Jackson, this probably isn't as much your experience because you were so young, but Macy and Austin, like the dating process for your parents, was that initially very awkward? Was that something that you had any anger towards? Were you kind of assuming when they got divorced that they would remarry, or were you like, there's no way this is ever going to happen? Or maybe you had hopes for your parents getting back together. Do you remember back on that time of when that transition started taking place?
I think I always, prior to my parents dating, had hoped that they would come back together. My mom was always really fighting for their marriage and saying, let's go to counseling, let's work through this. And my dad was kind of the one who walked away and said, I'm not going to try anymore. So I was hopeful for a while that my dad would turn around and pursue my mom again, but that didn't happen. My dad, I mean, he had gone through multiple affairs when he was married with my mom, and that kind of seemed to be his dating habits right after they had gotten divorced, kind of like, I'm wild and free and trying to find myself. So that was awkward. There were some younger women that was like, you're not that much older than me. So yeah, that was definitely weird. My mom was much more normal about her dating experience. So I was angry though, even with her dating someone else. And that took me a long time to work past that bitterness of like, I want my parents together, not dating other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Austin, how did your dad meet women through the years, these ones that he's dated?
I'm not sure how they met. don't know. It's all
you
mystery.
You don't do calls with him like every night to be like, hey, Dad, what is the latest?
No, actually, it was like a week until I found out he was engaged. So I don't know. We're kind of close, but at the same time, I've never been too involved with his dating life, mm-hmm. which I guess is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I remember initially, I mean, now I'm a little older. When he first started dating people, I was probably 18. So it was a little weird then because I'd go over to his house to visit and he'd introduce me to whoever he was dating that week or month. It was just kind of this awkward, I don't really care to know you. And it's great you know my dad, but like that doesn't mean we have to have a relationship. I think eventually he started getting more serious and, you know, now it's a little bit different where I kind of want to get to know the people.
His future wife.
My future, what will she be?
Stepmom.
Stepmom. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's kind of weird. But yeah, I still live pretty far away, so I've only met her a couple times. And she's nice and we get along, but mm-hmm. It's not like she'll be my mom at this point because I have one. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not that close with my dad, so I don't expect to be super close with her either.
Okay. So I kind of want to come back to that as we talk a little bit about, you know, what relationships are like now. But one question I have in the interim here is, so what, as you all were dating then and moving towards marriage, how did your parents' relationships, and I say plural, because whether their initial marriage or people they were dating afterwards, influence you for good or for bad as you were you just kind of like, well, I certainly don't need advice from my parents because they can't mm-hmm. even do it, or they're just weird, or, you know, praise God for a stripper who got saved, you know, because otherwise we'd not. Exactly. Yeah. So what were your feelings around your even potential for having a successful marriage or having a good dating experience? Where did you get your advice from?
You know, for me, my dad was always very honest with me as to he had a lot of what not to do, son, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and now and again, I've kind of.
And you said, just interrupting, Jackson, sorry, yeah. You have said before, I know, that you actually had a history of infidelity in your family.
Yeah, so. I was around 16 is when. So, you know, my parents came to faith, involved in church. We're there 5 nights a week, the whole deal, right? If the pendulum's over here, we're going to go over here. And we were known in this small community as, you know, they were the Christian family, you know, and we, you know, and I was known as that. My dad was Mr. PK and Promise Keeper and leading all of that. And around 15, 16 is when my dad was about to leave my stepmom for another lady that he had been involved with for a while. And, you know, stepmom's picking out apartments and they're moving and I never had to wrestle with the initial infidelity or separation of why aren't my mom and dad together? I was too young, but that was when I really got to wrestle with that then. And man, I hated my dad. Mm-hmm. I'm Jack the Third, like he's my hero, mm-hmm. right? I'm named after him. And I hated him, didn't want to see him, didn't trust him, didn't any of that. But I remember for me getting to wrestle with that at that age of going, I'm so tired of divorce because I was staring down another one. Mm-hmm. And I'm so tired of infidelity because I knew my dad's story and I'd seen my mom's story and everything that had gone on. And as I got older, and I don't know about you guys, but the certain questions I was wrestling with, I would begin wrestling with them. I'd want to know a little bit more about what happened. And then I'd learn a little bit and I'd be like, I'm done, you know? And so then, mm-hmm. and so for me, what I'm thankful for that experience was it allowed me to say, no more divorce, no more infidelity. I don't know when I'm going to get married. Here I was 15, 16 years old, got married young, but I don't know when I'm going to get married, but there's some choices I'm going to make that no one around me is making. And that's to be faithful, mm-hmm. and that's to be married once. Because my cousins had been divorced a couple times. My uncle's been divorced 3 times. I mean, my closest family, everybody was divorced multiple times. And so that was a linchpin moment for me, mm-hmm. Of making that choice personally. And then as I got older, I started digging into the past. So you're staring down marriage. So how did your marriage fall apart and what did you do? And then I'm staring down kids going, now, what was that for you? And so for me, it's always been, how much can I take before I get overwhelmed? And then I kind of shut the spigot there. If that's enough information, we'll engage later. But those are some of the ways that it really influenced me as a person, but then as my vision for marriage. There were certain things I can't get from my dad. I can't go to him with because choices that have been made, mm-hmm. and who I trust. And so it affected it in those ways as well.
Yeah,
I didn't date a whole lot. So like with how it impacted dating, it wasn't ever really an issue for me. Mm-hmm. The only person I really dated was Austin, and then we got married.
Were dating at the same time as your mom or dad, where it was like
by the time Austin and I started dating, my mom was getting married. So okay.
Because we've heard from boundless people who, no joke, have been in singles groups in churches, and their parents come in. That's awkward.
I do remember thought. I remember my mom saying she was upset just about her situation, and her saying something about I want to get married before my sister and I. So before you girls get married, and I'm thinking, you've already been married once. I want to get married. Why do you have to get a second one before I get one? Mm-hmm. You know, so that kind of thought crossed my mind, but I wasn't in a dating relationship while she was dating. Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't go to my dad for any sort of mm-hmm. relationship advice, just because mm-hmm. I know how what his history is. And it's just I don't trust your... quote unquote wisdom that you have from your experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say the same. I don't go to my dad for a whole lot of advice. especially when it comes
about anything
to dating or marriage.
Okay.
I guess that was one thing I learned through the whole process, was not to go to him for dating advice. Mm-hmm. But I think seeing him make mistakes kind of reinforced for me things I don't want to repeat, and looking for a wife. I think I knew some. I kind of could see some of the things that he struggled with, and knew I'm not gonna that's something I'm gonna look out for. I don't want to marry someone that's gonna treat me like that, or. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I guess the negative influence was kind of positive.
So it's kind of, in your case, Jackson, it's kind of weird because you're actually a part of a marriage ministry.
That's funny.
So
it's
you're
ironic.
now like the marriage expert. Do you go to family gatherings and they're all hey, so help us work through this? Or do you just kind of take that hat off?
I try to take the hat off.
Okay.
I mean, my mom.
You don't tell your dad how to run his marriage, or your mom?
Well, you know the funny thing. Mm-hmm. Both they both do this often. So my stepdad and mom were coming out just a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom's on the phone. They're on the road. My stepdad kind of rips the phone out of her hand. He goes, "Hey, need you to fix her when we get there. I got a list for you." And I'm like, "All right, Jerry,
nice.
that sounds great." And then my stepmom, and you talk about the difference in dynamics of relationships. She didn't have any children. I was her only child.
Mm-hmm.
And she leaned on me heavily at a peer relationship pretty early.
Okay.
I didn't know what was going on. It led to some enmeshment with her and my dad. But she comes to me often with kind of in joking, but if your dad would only, and you're just stupid dad, and if he, and I'm always going, the rule is you don't counsel mm-hmm. your family or your friends and your family, so leave me alone. And mm-hmm. so there's jokes often made about it, but what is ironic to me is, and so my mom's stepdad, brother, his girlfriend, her nephew, crazy mess was just in our house for a week, a couple weeks ago. And it's just funny to me because I was working half days and going back and forth. I'd go in and do my job as director of marriage at Focus and getting all these marriages help. And then I go home to just drama and unhealthy relationship with my brother. I am often reminded of, it is God's grace. I sit here today with you, let alone mm-hmm. in this building on a daily basis. Because mm-hmm. if you look at the resume and you look at the past, you're like, what are you doing here? And it's always, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but I'm supposed to be here and God has put this in front of me.
Yeah. Wow. So let's look now, just as we wrap up, kind of with, and Jackson, you kind of got the ball rolling, where relationships stand today. As you look back on your history, how did that play out with steps, with blended families, with holidays, with all of that? And how do you, is this your normal? I'm assuming it must be, especially for, the way that you're living now. And now, Macy and Austin, you're married, so you've got your own little nuclear family, but you still have all these families that come into the mix. What does that look like for you? What is your normal when it comes to extended family?
Hectic.
Yeah, holidays are busy.
They're not really vacation.
Three or four houses in a day.
It's like a parade of homes or something.
It really
like
is.
It's like an hors d'oeuvre, like progressive hors d'oeuvre party or something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, oh, you spent 2 hours with this parent. Aren't you going to spend the same amount of time with us? Like, even if it's not outright said, you know, it's like those undertones of.
It's usually outright said with my family. We usually get scolded at least once when we go home. But I don't know. I think it influences just, I feel like our little nuclear family, we're closer as a result because we don't have, I feel like I have very, whether it's good or bad, more shallow relationships with my parents just because I can't invest in like five different families as much as I'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
And so we end up being a lot closer in holidays. I look forward to just spending time with Macy rather than with all of our extended family.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know. I mean, what I'm hearing too is it's hard to look forward to the holidays when it's because, again, pretty early on, I was Monday, Wednesday, Dad, Tuesday, Thursday, Mom. They all stayed in the same little town on 700, and how that worked, I have no idea. But so holidays where it's 2 o'clock. Go to your dad's at 2 o'clock, go to your mom's. And so everything was split. And so I've always had an issue with time. You know, some people are quality, some people are quantity, but I was trying to be both and with no regard for my own well-being. And at the time when I was responsible for me, that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could completely neglect myself, wear myself out, all the emotions, all the feeling bad. Did I do enough time? Did I do this? Well, then I threw my sweet wife into the mix. And one of the biggest lessons I had to learn was preferring her over the expectations of the family. So we had to create a new normal. We've had to create traditions. 2 years in, she's all frustrated around Thanksgiving. I'm like, what is going on with you? And she's like, you don't have traditions. And I'm like, yes, we don't. Because her family, nuclear family, strong, no divorce anywhere. Everybody's great. The holidays look the same every time. And she's like, it's 2 o'clock. Go. You don't have time for a nap. I got to go see my mom and my grandma and my cousin, and my brother. And you get no my set. And so we had to develop this new normal. And for us and for those young couples or people dating and navigating this, put some boundaries in now. And if you're married right now and you're struggling like I did of like, but my mom needs more time and my dad needs more, and they're mad at me, and they're going to choose your spouse. And it took me too long to do that. You're going to have to develop a new normal and you're going to have to wrestle with the past to understand what's going on, be respectful to the present and honoring your family. But as you're entering into that most significant relationship that is marriage, there's some tough choices and some clear boundaries and that are going to need to be put in place for the health of your spouse, for the health of your marriage, and honestly, for the health of your family.
Yeah.
Because this is your opportunity to change the tide, to change some of those patterns. And that's the opportunity you have, is this new nuclear family within marriage.
Cool. Well, I feel like we barely got the conversation started and we have to stop. But great thoughts, you guys. And I appreciate you being able to not only look back and recognize how you've had to reconcile the stories that you kind of inherited and how they probably, you know, ended up being not quite what you had originally thought. But then, too, how you're looking towards your own marriages now and realizing that there are things that you can change and there are things you have changed. And I think it all comes back to the power of God's working in our life and the ability to break the cycle when he's in charge. So thanks, you guys, so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, hey, folks, as we are here for our culture segment of The Boundless Show, I'm very pleased to introduce a guest via phone. His name is Hafiz Bauku, and he has written the book Sex, God, and the Single Life, and the subtitle on that is An Honest Journey to Satisfying Intimacy. He is a young dude. We like it when, I mean, he's already writing books, my goodness. But originally from the ATL, from Atlanta, he was just telling me.
Great city.
Yeah, great city. Apparently he's their PR person. but now living in Texas. So great to have you here with us, Hafiz.
Thank you so much. This is super awesome. I thank you a lot for the opportunity.
Oh, no, it's wonderful. So, will you tell a little bit, you know, in this book, and you, maybe you'll have to weave in a little bit of how you decided to actually write this, but you start out by kind of sharing some of your own story about growing up kind of in the public schools and, you know, figuring that you were going to learn about sex and, you know, how it was going to be something, you know, obviously your classmates were already talking about it and stuff. And then how it was, what was it, like 4 years ago you became a Christian?
Yeah, 4 years ago, that awesome day.
Okay. Now, tell us how, I mean, through growing up, and we're going to circle back to kind of some of the framework for sexuality and what you learned, but tell us your experience. How did you become a Christian? How did this come about?
Long story short, I played college football at a school called Wingate University in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I played defensive back, and if you know anything about defensive backs, they're the most arrogant position on the most arrogant sport, and college and high school and professional level. So, yeah, so I was really successful my freshman year, and I was, like I said, I was really arrogant, and so I got in a lot of trouble. I actually got to a point where I got kind of incognito suspended off the school. My freshman mm-hmm. year, and then I had transferred to Troy University. But then when I got to Troy, I was kind of depressed because I wasn't able to play my first year because I had to sit out due to NCAA rules. And just during that time, it was a really, really rough time. I kind of partied a lot, you know, kind of just was really, really depressed. And, you know, just life, football was my everything, and I lost it. So the following semester, I got back on the team because I finished sitting out my year, and I got invited to a Bible study by one of my teammates. And it was, you know, I'd never been to Bible study before in my life, you know, because I didn't know that you could do those things by choice. I thought you had to do it because your mom told you to do it. Mm-hmm. And now that I was free, I definitely wasn't going to do it in college. But I got invited. And it's the very first day I was just rocked. I was just rocked by the message. I was just kind of, I was super intrigued. I remember going back home and calling, like, my mom, my sister, my best friend, just like, yo, like, this is crazy. And I wrestled with the Bible study teachings for, like, probably a good four weeks. And then just one day I just came up to my buddy Zach, which is my mentor, the guy who shared with me about Jesus for the first time. I just said, yo, I want to be a Christian. And so, It was gravy ever since then, and you know, and so yeah. Now I'm here.
Well, I love, I think it was in a blog post where you talked about kind of your relationship with Zach, and you said, you know, you liked it because he was just this country boy who that's who he was. He wasn't all trying to be black or wasn't trying to be like, you know, acting like he grew up in the hood or anything. He was just himself, but he loved you through all that.
Yeah, man, Zach is probably the greatest guy in the world. And man, I was so bad to him, but Zach was just so good. And like I said, you know, obviously I'm a black kid from the city, you know, Zach is from like Kentucky. Like, I don't think anybody knows where that's on the map. And, and so, you know, just for him, just, I mean, he was just so faithful, man. He just really loved us. He loved me, loved all the guys at Troy. And so, man, just like really got to see, you know, God, through him. So it was a great, he was a great guy. I loved him a lot, even
cool.
Till today.
Well, let's talk about where in the book you, obviously on the front end, you talk about your understanding of sexuality pre-Jesus. Talk a little bit mm-hmm. about where you got all your info and how that influenced you. And then once you became a Christian, when did you start getting the drift that things had to change?
Okay, so like I said, I grew up in a non-Christian household. My dad is actually Muslim, so, you know, kind of, I grew up in New York and I grew up in Atlanta. Obviously, Atlanta's the best city in the world, but New York could arguably be the second best city. And, man, it was just really, really, you know, typical non-religious household, you know. Could watch whatever we wanted, you know. Had internet. My dad was a huge tech guy, so we had internet at a very young age. Obviously, you know, when internet was just born, like, you know, a lot of parents had no idea what was on it, so obviously pornography, different things like that. And just, you know, like I said, most of my friends, they may have professed Christianity, but they were so far from it. And so just I learned a lot just from hearing stories from them. I learned a lot from what I saw on the internet. I learned a lot, you know, just as I began to experiment with, you know, what I was seeing, what I was learning, just, you know, just through culture. And just as most people know, your parents is such an awkward thing to talk about. So your parents literally don't say anything. And my parents, also forgot to mention, my parents are from Nigeria, so they weren't totally familiar with, you know, American culture and kind of what goes on in TV and in movies. So there was just so much stuff I was exposed to that they had no idea, you know, what it was about, or, you know, what was going on. And so, and then when you go to college, it's just literally your identity is so wrapped up in your sexual competence, especially as a male. And so when you go to college, you know, there's such an insecurity, like it's just not even so much a self-desire, but there's such an insecurity which makes you lead to sexual promiscuity because you feel as though if I don't do it, I'm someone less of a guy. And that's kind of where I would say really got where I really started, you know, kind of going down that path, you know, just really initially just being made fun of, you know, at times by my teammates, and just really, man, just really started just being like them and just viewing kind of girls as tools, and, you know, just kind of just, you know, playing games and just all the other stuff. And so that's kind of how I was just for a really, really long time. And then, man, it's weird because when I talk about in my book a little bit, like when Zach shared with us the gospel, I don't ever remember him telling me about, like, what I had to do when I was a Christian. Not saying that Zach didn't do a good job, because obviously Zach, you know, was a beast. But it was Jesus was just so big, you know? Jesus was just so awesome. Like, Jesus was just so much what I was longing for. Jesus was so much everything that I desired that, like, it was that kind of like the parable of the great treasure, in which he was such a great treasure. I was so consumed with it that I was willing to do whatever it took to get Jesus. So after I got Jesus, I was like, you know, kind of, you know, I wonder what I do now. And so Zach gave me a Bible, and Zach said, just start reading it. On a side note, my mom is a Christian. Crazy, I know. But mom is a Christian. She did give me a Bible when I was 11 years old. I read it, got to Genesis, I think chapter 3, read something about so-and-so begetting so-and-so, and I went to sleep. Never read it again. So when Zach gave me my Bible, I was like, where do I start? And Zach was like, you know, start in Matthew, start in the New Testament is a really good place to start. So I remember reading, going through Matthew, and I'm sorry, I don't know if this is, just joke maybe appropriate, but I was going through Matthew, and I got to chapter 5, and when Jesus was talking about, you know, sexual adultery being in the heart, and like you, like, and looking at a woman with adultery. And I remember in my mind, I was like, dang, Jesus, I can't even look no more. You know, just like, you know, I was just like, man. And so, like, literally, it was just like countercultural to me that, you know, like, there is this huge standard, and not just a standard because God was trying to oppress me, but a standard because God was trying to bless me. And so I just started, you know, learning more, and then I was kind of interested at this girl at the time, and so she started introducing me to Mark Driscoll and then all different stuff, and then Chandler, and I just started learning about, like, sex as not being a tool to explore, to lead people away from God, but a tool to serve and to push people to God. And so, like, slowly but surely, my life started being transformed in an area of my life, and I started experiencing healing in my own life because of my past sins and mistakes.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit, because I know that you explore this a bit in the book, what you think some of the misconceptions are that singles have about sex, whether it's, you know, completely sin driven, you know, about using people or whatever, but even the ones that Christian singles honestly have where they think, you know, what sex will ultimately be or whatever. What are some of these misconceptions that are floating around in the church?
Yeah, so I'm gonna try to tackle three really, really quickly. I think the very first thing is obviously, like, the obsession with sex.
Mm-hmm.
That I talk about, that, you know, I kind of went through later on in my life, in which the church does, you know, like, the church does a great job of sometimes maybe being more reactive than proactive. So, mm-hmm. like, with our culture being changed to very liberal, very, you know, hypersexual culture, you know, the church, instead of, you know, kind of demeaning sex or putting sex away in the past, now the church is like, okay, you know, sex is a gift from God, which is true. And then they really, like, say, okay, singles, just wait until you get to be married, and then you can have all the sex you want. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thing. Just, you know, wait till you get married, have all the sex you want. And so marriage becomes about sex and no longer becomes about loving people. Mm-hmm. And so your heart is still the same. You're still that selfish person who just wants to use somebody. You may not say, you know, vocally, but you're still that selfish person that wants to use someone just to meet your own needs. And so marriage now becomes just about having sex, and it's not about loving people. And so that's one of the biggest things, I think, with our obsession with sex, is just it's not even about loving people anymore, not even about serving people anymore, just about having this one-time experience that I believe that we do these things. And then when I know a lot of my friends, which leads on to the second thing, they believe that so much of their problem is that they don't have sex at the moment. If I can have sex, all my problems will go away. And you find out that's not the case, which is the second thing. The first thing is that it's too high of a view of sex and, like, you know, like, as an exploiting of people. I think it's too much a highly view of sex of making you complete, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, you're like, man, I'm missing out so much of my life if I'm not having sex. And so people look to this as this experience that will kind of make them into who they want to be, and they find out that a lot of your problems are still here. You know what I mean? Like, you're still here. You think, okay, I'm struggling with pornography today because I don't have a wife. So your wife becomes your tool to just, you know, meet your needs. Like, you know, and your heart is still the issue, you know? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of Christians, I think you're still having the same selfish mentality, but you kind of taking this marriage context in which, it's, to me, in my opinion, you're still sinning because you still have this heart of using people and not heart of serving people. And then I think the third misconception I talk about in the book, I think as a church and maybe as a culture, is that I think we have a skewed view of sin, you know? Mm-hmm. And what that leads to is that a lot of times when we think of sin, we think of like this monster, right? We think of this monster, this evil, nasty, mean thing. So, like, murdering and genocide and robbing, and like, you think of like all these mean things. And then, but what happens is, when, let's say, you do have sex outside of marriage or anything like that, and maybe it's good, you know, and you're like, hold on one second, I thought that sin was bad and sin was evil, and all of a sudden this is good, so therefore, then this must be good. And not really understanding that sin is simply a state of your heart where you're trusting in yourself or anything other than God. And so I think a lot of times people think, man, like, okay, the church is telling me these things because they're holding out of pleasure, but sin is pleasurable. One of my favorite references of sin, and it's kind of weird to have a favorite reference for sin, but one of my favorite references of sin goes in, I believe it's Hebrews 11, when they have the little hall of faith, that's what they call it. Mm-hmm. And they talk about Moses, and it says that Moses would rather choose to suffer with his brethren than to experience the fleeting pleasures of sin in Egypt. Mm. And sin is pleasurable. That's what the Bible depicts it as. It's pleasurable. And it's meant to be pleasurable for the meant so it could kill you. Mm. You know, you can't have the bait wouldn't be a bait if the bait wasn't enticing to the viewer. And so I think the biggest thing is that as we continue, as people talk about it, especially, you know, as the culture begins to say, oh, this church stuff is old school, it's stupid, you're missing out, da da da, and people do engage and like, oh, this isn't as bad as I thought, is understanding that sin may be good in the now, but it always leads to death and destruction later, whether that's, you know, obvious stuff, but a lot of times, mm-hmm. it's subtle stuff that makes the big things.
Yeah. So in light of that, I mean, knowing that, yeah, we can't elevate sin to a place that's not rightful, we need to recognize the allure of sin, and then also, you know, not think that sin's going to solve all of our problems. How then for singles who are trying to figure out how to live out a biblical construct of sex, how can we live out sexuality as a single in a God-honoring way?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because it goes back to, like, Dr. Doug Rosenau. He is the guy who mentored me through this book writing process. He's a super awesome guy. So wise. He's been literally doing sex therapy longer than I've been living times two. so So Dr. Doug is just really wise. And Dr. Doug talks about sexuality is not just so much a sexual feeling as we think about it or a sexual experience, but really your just like your whole, your gender makeup, your masculinity, your femininity. And I think a lot of times we believe that, you know, okay, like I'm not experiencing a healthy sex. I'm being sexually oppressed because I'm not having any sexual experiences. But my question is, if your sexual experiences are unhealthy and killing you, is that really oppression? Mm-hmm. You know, is freedom really this idea of being able to do whatever I want? Or is freedom really the idea to be able to do whatever you want, and which that will lead to your blessing and your health?
Yeah.
And so really there's a lot of things that I really think about would lead to living a healthy sexuality when you're single. And the first one is being free of sexual shame, which I talk about in the book a little bit, because a lot of people experience a large amount of sexual shame, Christian or non-Christian. Mm-hmm. And so the beauty about the gospel frees you from that shame. It frees you from all this unnecessary condemnation that you experience, which will then lead you to be more loving, be more thankful for God for making you who you are and less hating of yourself. And so really a part of your sexuality is also part of your masculinity and your femininity, which you, a lot of us, when you have a past of sin, you look in a mirror and you hate yourself so much. There's so much shame because of your past. And what the gospel does is provide so much of a renewal of that, and makes you so thankful to God for forgiving you, and you begin to forgive yourself. And another thing to me that's really, really important is just the lack of, like, unhealthy sexual decision-making. Like, I don't think people understand, like, when God gives the law for his blessing. And when you think, okay, as a single, my sexual experiences, I'm missing out. But really, you're missing out on what's going to kill you, what's going to hurt you, what's separating you from God, what's causing you to hurt people, what's inflicting damage to yourself. Because that's what all that sin does. It hurts God, it hurts others, it hurts self. Mm-hmm. And so really, you live more sexually healthy than anybody else because of God. You now understand what is healthy, what will give you life, not so much what will take life. And then the last thing, which I think is also one of the most important things, is a concept I call sexual wholeness, which I believe is truly at the center of sexual health and a healthy sexuality. And that concept is like not using sex to make you, to make your identity as a guy to prove yourself to be a man, or as a woman to prove yourself loved and valued. Like when you experience sexual wholeness and your whole full person, which the awesome thing about Jesus is he makes all of us whole no matter where we've come from and where we've been. And the beauty of that is once we become whole, you know, we now no longer use sex as other people do to make it, to complete us.
Yeah.
And so that's just so damaging in our culture. So many people are doing it. And that's the beauty of the gospel, that we don't have to do it because Christ makes us whole.
Hmm. I like the you referenced the story in the book about Ian and Larissa, who many of our listeners have seen that on YouTube. And here, you know, those of you who know, I actually interviewed Larissa on the show. You know, I think 10 months into their dating relationship, Ian was in a car accident and has significant brain damage, and she had to learn. She decided to marry him and said, you know, the most important things that he could fulfill as a husband he had in place. And so that I know that one messed you up, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And I talk about it in my book, and I don't want like I knew Lisa was gonna bring it up. I knew it.
Because I'm gonna ask you what your thoughts are now and how God's growing you through that one.
Yeah, man, that story just rocked me.
Yeah.
Because like I said, a lot of times when I say anything in my book or say anything about people, I can really just substitute people with the word Hafiz, because it's really so much of myself and my journey to help other people's journey. And like, I literally was that. Like before, when I wasn't a Christian, okay, you know, I just used sex as a means to satisfy myself and explore other people. And then it was like, okay, I can't have sex until I get married. Okay, cool. I was going to wait till I get married. And so marriage, the only reason I wanted to get married was to have sex and to still exploit somebody else. And when I heard the story of Ian and Larissa, it was just amazing that literally, like, Ian couldn't give her anything, but she still wanted to give him everything in return. Mm-hmm. And, like, that to me, I was just so rocked. I was like, yo, my heart, my heart is not that, you know, like I cannot honestly say that I could experience that. And God just continued to show me what love was, you know, like sex is meant to love somebody, to serve someone, to push them to God. And to love is simply to reflect God. And what is God? God is unconditionally serving us, and God's unconditionally faithful to us. And so to me, like, it really challenged my heart.
Yeah.
And to me, the only reason she was able to love Ian, the only reason she is still able to love Ian, and the only reason that any of us will be able to love somebody is first experience love from God itself, himself, I'm sorry. And so that to me was just so big. Like, I just really started seeing that what I really needed in life wasn't so much sex. What I didn't need in life was so much a relationship. What I really needed was more of God, because God was a source of love. And the only way I could ever love somebody is to experience love from God. And it's not even so much that I'm experiencing love for God for the purpose of loving somebody, but I'm experiencing love from God to satisfy my soul. And so, man, after that story, I really started doing a lot of heart work, and I stopped going to people, going to sex, going to pleasure to experience love and honor and all these things I was yearning for. Instead, I started going to God, and through going to God for my source, I was better able to love other people. Okay. And so this story just really rocked me.
Yeah. So two quick questions as we wrap up here. The first, your dad being a Muslim, what does he think about your newfound faith?
My dad is the greatest man in the world. I love my dad so much. He's a super awesome guy. I pray for my dad every single day. My dad's really weird. He's kind of a liberal Muslim, so to speak. He grew up in Christian school, and that really messed him up because there's a lot of hypocritical people there. But I really believe that the Lord is going to open my dad's heart, and my dad's going to experience the gospel. But my dad, he's cool. He's excited about it. He read the book, which is, oh my goodness, if you're going to write a book that your parents are going to read, don't mind about your sexual past. but man, just my dad was able to hear about Jesus. I'm always excited about that. And my dad was really excited because my dad was just happy that I was just being honest and being transparent and just willing to help people, which my dad has been doing since I've been born. He's an awesome father.
Yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and join you in praying for him, Hafiz.
Thank you so much.
Final question. So are you dating anyone now? You know, we keep it real here at the Boundless Show, Hafiz. We just put it out there.
So this is kind of awkward. So I'm not dating anybody right now, but there is this girl that I'm trying to, you know, see what's going to happen with. I don't want to say anything because she may listen to it.
Okay.
Pray for me. That's all I can say. We can talk off the air.
Okay. Well, all I'm going to say,
I'm really interested in.
All I'm going to say is she needs to watch her back. Okay. Because we have some ladies that are probably going to contact you as a result of this show. So you need to be prepared for that. And I'm just saying, okay. So, that is good. Now don't you get into some weird friendship with this girl. Okay. You need to read boundless.org.
No, you need to go. I'm not that guy.
You need to go after her. Okay. So
I am, but I sometimes I do too much. That's the only reason I'm saying that, because sometimes I do too much, and I was told that too much too early is not a good thing. So
okay.
I'm just trying to be as smart as I can.
Okay. So I'm going to you need to be honest and upfront without being creepy. Okay. So you do.
Okay. That's the balance.
Okay.
That's the balance.
Yeah. So you keep us posted here at the Boundless Show on how that goes down. All right. But in the meantime, all these other women are going to contact you, so you're going to have to deal with that. I'm just giving you a heads up. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I just hope they meet Jesus. It's not me. It's all God.
Exactly.
All God.
Well, the book is Sex, God, and the Single Life. I've been talking to Hafiz Baoku, and just a great privilege to meet him, to have a friend out there. When you're not just hanging around the ATL or now in Texas, you come on out to Colorado and visit us out here. We'll bring you up a 14er. Okay, Hafiz?
I would love that.
All right. God bless you, brother.
All right. Take care.
We are the ones who sin, hence laid thrown within. But you save hallelujah. Redemption in your hands and faith from blood that ran. Oh, Jesus, your
as we finish out this week's show, we have Diane Moon from our counseling department. Hi, Diane.
Hey, thanks for having me. Here. Yeah, thank you.
And thanks for being willing to tackle one of our listener questions. As I introduced it before the show, we basically said that this was going to be about a boyfriend who wants a break. So let me go ahead and read the actual question. Okay. Our listener says, my boyfriend wants a break. He says that he needs to figure things out in his life. He said it's not about me, but that he needs to be at peace with himself so that our relationship can be better. But I still feel like it is about me. He doesn't stop seeing his friends. The only one that's on hold is me. I don't know if I should break up with him or just wait until he has things figured out. What do you think?
Well, you know, oftentimes when we hear taking a break or figuring things out, it really is kind of a breakup. And we hear this all the time working with, you know, single couples. And it basically means, you know, he's done. But one of the things that I really would encourage her to do, if she is emotionally connected to him and she feels like this is the one, he is the one, that she would just ask him to define, you know, figuring things out. What does that mean? Where do I stand? What is my value in this relationship? Because again, he might be saying I'm done, but not wanting to hurt her feelings. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important also that she look at his effectiveness in communicating openly and honestly. And if he is done with the relationship, why isn't he able to tell her that? Mm-hmm. And so then you want to look at that as, is this a predictor of future behavior? Mm-hmm. And do I really want to be in a relationship like this where there is really, we might say there is no honesty. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I think that's good. And I think, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing that he's realizing, you know, that in this relationship, maybe he's not ready to be in a relationship mm-hmm. or he needs to take mm-hmm. a step back. Maybe he has to work on stuff. I think I've mentioned on the show, I went on some dates with a guy who said, dating you made me realize I need counseling. So I was like, okay, well, glad you figured that out.
That could be a good thing.
Yeah, it could be a very good thing. I would just say, and Diane, I don't know if you agree. I mean, it just seems to me that this girl, again, because he's not defining anything, get some clarity on that.
Absolutely.
And then I would say, you know, she does need to recognize that, okay, they are not in a relationship. I would say, you know, whether she needs to call that a breakup and make it a big drama. But basically, she just needs to be like, you figure that out. But in the meantime, she needs to not put herself on hold. And because if she's meant to date and marry some other guy, that guy needs to move in there, okay? I mean, she needs to. I see a lot of girls that put themselves on hold for someone they're you know, holding out for. And then 6 or 7 years later, it peters out anyway, or nothing comes of it.
And that's why I think, you know, it's important for her to be empowered to ask him, well, define that for me. What does that look like? And really, what is my value in this relationship? Mm-hmm. And again, just being very careful that if he's doing this now, could this be the future behavior?
Well, good thoughts, Diane. Thank you so much. Okay, folks, we always want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org, whether it's a relationship question or just something about life or faith. We do want to go ahead and weigh in on that, give you some advice from our wonderful professionals who are here to help. And make sure that you go onto the site. You can search topics. You can search dates. If you think you heard something in the past that you need to rehear, if you think you heard something that maybe someone else needs to hear, we are not above you sending links to people. Just do it kindly. Don't send it to your boyfriend. You need to read this. Though some of you do that. But anyway, above all, we want to see you around here next week, and I hope we will. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.